Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 25 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we meet a man who is completely outnumbered by his dogs, but keeps them under remarkable control.
I do start off with the puppies at about 6 months of age, where I introduce them to the sit and the stay. All the time, it's got to be fun for them. No punitive treatment or anything like that.
We bring you the breed profile of the Lakeland Terrier.
He's got his own status in the house. You know, he's very entertaining, but he is hard work. But we get the rewards from him.
Yeah.
And in puppy playtime, Jenny has another great website for you to explore.
If you'd like to send a doggy e-card, this site is definitely for you.
As well as that, we have the latest episode of Buddy's Diary. But before all that, here's the news.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. First up this time, advice on some of the things not to do with your dog in a car. It may be tempting, but it really isn't wise to leave your dog in a car.
Yes, I know that's an old piece of advice because of the dangers of the dog overheating.
Ah, but there's more to it than that. It is becoming increasingly common for dogs to be stolen from parked cars. Recently, a beagle pup, Dora, was left in her owner's car while he attended a business meeting in Wales in the UK. After the meeting, the car and the puppy were missing. £1,000 reward was offered, but it drew no responses. However, after an anxious 4 weeks, Dora was found and taken to a local police station. The car hasn't turned up yet. Dora and her family were lucky enough to have a happy ending, but many dogs and owners are not so lucky.
Okay, I reckon I can beat that. Now, this might sound obvious, but something else to avoid in the car is giving your dog a driving lesson.
Okay, very funny. Surely not advice anyone needs.
So you would think. But it would have been a timely warning for a woman in North China recently. The woman in question was in the habit of letting her dog sit on her lap during journeys. From there, it seemed a small step to let the dog have a go at steering while the woman operated the pedals. Unfortunately, but predictably, the adventure ended badly, with the dog steering the car into other vehicles. Luckily, neither the woman nor the dog were injured, and the woman paid for the damage caused.
So, I guess there's another reason not to leave your dog in the car, in case he tries to drive away.
Well, not being able to get a doggy driving licence is certainly one good law, but there have been occasions when badly thought out laws have been passed about dogs. Currently retired actress Brigitte Bardot is campaigning against a law that recently came into effect in Switzerland. In a very unfortunate event, a child was attacked by a pit bull dog in a public park, and as a result, legislation has been passed ruling that every dog should be muzzled in public. Owners face a fine if they do not comply with the new law. Bardot points out in a letter to a newspaper that this is ridiculous, as the vast majority of dogs pose no danger at all to the public.
Britain's pet charity, the Blue Cross, is calling on career canines to lend a paw and join the rat race by taking part in Take Your Dog to Work Day. Now celebrating its 11th birthday, Take Your Dog to Work Day is the most popular charity dog event in the canine calendar. Every year, thousands of people across the country join forces to take their dog to work with them, with 3,000 dog lovers registering to take part in 2005. The event also attracts global support, with career canines taking part in countries from Cameroon to Canada and from Portugal to Pakistan.
On the subject of charities, if you're looking for a calendar for 2007, we have a couple of ideas that will appeal to dog lovers as well as raising money for dogs. In the UK, Rod Stewart's fiancée, Penny Lancaster, walked the PDSA blue carpet to the Mall Galleries in London to open a week-long exhibition of at-home photographs of pets with their celebrity owners, which she shot for the 2007 PDSA Pet Portraits calendar. The calendar for veterinary charity PDSA is new mum Penny's first assignment since the birth of her son Alistair last year. Indeed, on some of the shoots, those closer to home, Alistair went too. Penny photographed most of the celebrities at their own homes, but it was their furry friends that took the centre stage.
On sale now, the 2007 PDSA Pet Portraits calendar includes rock legend Sir Elton John with his playful Cocker Spaniels, Arthur and Marilyn, pop icon Lulu with her cheeky Scottish Terrier, Clyde, rock star Rod Stewart with his adorable golden Labrador, Mrs. Potts, and actress Holly Willoughby with her perfect cat, Mew Mew. The stars all freely participated in the calendar to raise money for leading veterinary charity PDSA, which exists to care for the pets of people in need by providing free veterinary care to their sick and injured animals and promoting responsible pet ownership. PDSA treats some 4,650 sick and injured pets every working day.
Funds raised from the sale of the calendar go direct to PDSA. Priced at just $4.99, the 2007 PDSA Pet Portraits calendar can be purchased from the Mail Galleries, from all PDSA charity shops and online. Guests at the gallery launch took part in a silent auction for their chance to own one of the 13 celebrity portraits on display. And from Thursday the 24th of August, the general public will also be able to make a bid on trading website eBay. All proceeds will go towards helping pets in need of vets.
Commenting on the exhibition and calendar, Penny said, "I became involved with PDSA because animals and photography are two of my biggest passions. Shooting the 2007 Pet Portraits calendar seemed like a great combination for me. It's been immense fun, and I'm amazed at how well behaved all the animals were." For the full rundown of celebrities appearing in the calendar, and for a link to the PDSA site, check out the Dogcast website.
In America, to coincide with the first anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, a new colourful 16-month dog calendar is dedicated to helping homeless pets in New Orleans, which have suffered from the loss of animal shelters and veterinarian hospitals. Doggies Angel, a charitable organisation committed to the rescue of homeless animals, has created a unique dog calendar featuring some truly winning canines. The charity will contribute 60% of the net proceeds from calendar sales to the Louisiana SPCA for the benefit of a large number of animals displaced by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, according to Vincenza Bleschia, founder and executive producer.
In New Orleans, 8,500 pets were displaced as Hurricane Katrina devastated the city. Those animals were left to fend for themselves in the flooded streets as overwhelmed volunteers, in desperate need of water, food and medical supplies, rescued as many as they could. 1 year later, many pets are still in desperate need. Bleschia, driven by her enormous passion and love for animals, decided that she had to do something to help these suffering displaced pets. In a typical year, Louisiana SPCA serves thousands of people and their pets through adoptions, spay-neuter services, feral cat initiative, obedience classes, and community outreach programs. Last year's hurricane destroyed the Louisiana SPCA shelter and crushed its infrastructure. The LA SPCA is currently operating out of a converted warehouse while they construct a new shelter that will cost approximately $8.5 million and take up to 2 years to complete.
"Our mission at Doggies Angel," said Bleschia, "is to create unique, exciting and innovative products in order to raise as much money as possible for unfortunate animals that are abandoned, lost or mistreated. The calendar is the first in our line of products. This is a one-of-a-kind calendar," emphasised Bleschia. "There is great freedom. The images were created with no rules, no stereotypes. The photo shoot was an experience where everything flowed and was very natural. Doggies Angel is well on its way to becoming a cult object for people who love animals, photography and beauty." The calendar can be ordered only from the official site, and if you'd like to find out more, click the link on the Dogcast site.
An excellent present for a fellow dog lover. After all, there are now less than 100 doggy walking days until Christmas. That's all for today, so it's goodbye from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. I recently encountered Chris Warner, a man who has his 5 Labradors under amazing control. Here, Chris shares with us what it's like to live with 5 dogs and also passes on his tips on his training regime.
Starting with the youngster, we've got Reg. He's a chocolate male. He's 18 months of age. Following on from that, we've actually got Reggie's mother, which is Pepper. She's also a chocolate Labrador. She's 5 years of age. The next dog that I have is a yellow Labrador called Jess. She's 6 years of age. Then, as we're going up, we've got Doug, He's a black Labrador who's 8 years of age. And then finally, within the Labrador clan, we've got Ash, who's 10 years of age.
Right.
Sorry, I had to think about that one there. Got that many.
I'm not surprised.
Yes.
Now, I met you, Chris, when we were at our local park, and I was there with my one Labrador, failing to control him, mm-hmm. and you were there with your five,
yeah.
completely outnumbered, you and one whistle, and you just had them turning on a sixpence. Mm-hmm. So tell us, how do you achieve that?
OK, well, if I can just sort of give you a little bit of background to myself. As a hobby, I do actually train the gun dogs, or train the Labrador gun dogs to compete in gun dog working tests and field trials, for which there is a high level of obedience required, because it's not uncommon for the dog to be required to sit by your side patiently and steadily without making a noise, without moving, possibly for up to sort of 45 minutes, even an hour. So I do start off with the puppies at about 6 months of age, where I introduce them to the sit and the stay. All the time, it's got to be fun for them. It's a training regime with the emphasis on fun. No punitive treatment or anything like that. I do have to say, though, that if they do step out of line, we very quickly tell them that, no, that's not right, and they'll correct what's gone on. So they start off from a very young age with basic obedience, the sit, the stay. Because of the nature of the dog, because they're so people friendly, their nature means that they want to please. So consequently, they try to do everything that you ask of them, so that in return they are pleasing the owner, or in my instance, how they view me as the pack leader. So from a very early age, we're introducing the sit and the stay. As we progress from that, we introduce what we call the recall. That is where, via a whistle, and all of my instructions are whistle-based, I do endorse it with verbal commands, be it the sit, the stay, come. But it's predominantly whistle-based, a standard gun dog trainer's whistle. So having mastered the sit and the stay, we then look at the recall, because it is important that they come back to you when you want them to come back to you, not when they want to come back to you. And once again, from the competition point of view, that is an important feature of the dog's work, that, shall we say, if it goes out of the area that it is required to be searching in or hunting in, the recall whistle will call the dog back to you. So that is the following stage of the training. And in conjunction with that, we also have what we call the stop whistle. And basically what that means is that when the dog is out away from you, be it at a distance from as short as 20 yards up to the more advanced dogs away 100 yards, the dog, you will need to attract the dog's attention. And we do that by what we call the stop whistle. And once again, the dog, on hearing the stop whistle, should stop what it's in the process of doing and look back to the handler, e.g. myself, for advice as to what is required of me then. So what we actually embark upon is a training regime starting probably from 4 to 6 months of age, progressing right through to 18 months, 2 years of age, introducing all of the disciplines that are required for gun dog training, for competition work, and also for having a responsible dog out in the shooting field, which is another aspect of what I use the dogs for, because not only do they compete in gun dog working tests and field trials, they also, I take them out regularly in the shooting field, and they'll do a day's work retrieving in the shooting field.
Mm-hmm. One thing that fascinated me was, I must admit, I bribe my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I use food, obviously praise as well, but you know, I bribe them with treats. It works. They do what I want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a take on that that it hadn't occurred to me, because in your kind of training, treats aren't always the best motivation, are they?
Treats are not always the best motivation. The biggest single motivation, from my point, is that the dogs must want to do the work. They must want to do the training. They must want to please me. I've had situations in the past where I've rewarded dogs, but shall we say it's created almost a negative condition, in so much as that the dog is so anxious to get back to you for its treat. Now, bearing in mind, these guys here are retrievers, so they're carrying things in their mouth. Out in the shooting field, that potentially could be a wounded bird. the situation I encountered once with a dog was that it was that anxious to come back to you to collect its treat. The retrieve that it was delivering, once it got to within a yard of you, it would spit out the retrieve and come up to you and put its head up and say, OK, Dad, I brought it back to you. Can I have my retreat? Can I have my treat now? So treats do have their place within the training programme. However, how I view it is that with my love and care of the dogs, they want to work with me, they want to please me, and consequently the praise that they get from myself when they've successfully completed the task that I've asked of them is sufficient for them. That is their sufficient reward.
Yeah. And do you work with them one-to-one?
Yes, I mean, sort of, I do. In a dog's early stage of training, then it's very much one-to-one. But from there, there is a big emphasis on the need for group training, because these dogs have got to learn that it's not always going to be them. There are other dogs, be it my dogs, be it fellow gun dog handlers' dogs, that it'll be their retrieve. So these guys have to learn that it's not always them. In the early stages, when we're doing the very basics, then yes, it's very much on a one-to-one basis. But once we've progressed beyond the basics, then I do take them out in a group environment and we'll perhaps sit them all up in a line, and in turn, by their name only, will they be given a retrieve. So there is a need for group training so that they learn that, once again, they've got to be sit, they've got to be patient, and they will only get their retrieve when I tell them to, not when they want to do. And that's where group training is invaluable.
Now, I just wondered that because with our puppy, it's been quite handy to have Buddy as an example, because you can say, come, and he comes here, and they all come, Star, and treat her as well, and she gets the idea quicker then.
Absolutely, absolutely. And once again, this is where it's invaluable to have older, more experienced dogs. As for instance, when I met you for the first time, my dogs were all running, I don't say what, but they were running, they were free running.
They were enjoying the park.
Exactly,
weren't they?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, on the stop whistle, they all stopped. When you introduce a young dog, it's so much easier to have an older dog to teach the young dog the ropes, because all of a sudden, when these dogs are out running and I blow the recall whistle, all of the dogs will come back. The youngster is out running and thinking, well, hang on a minute, I've heard this noise, they've all gone back to Dad. Why is that? And very quickly they associate the sound of that recall with the requirement to come back to you. So initially they're following their peers, but very soon they themselves associate that recall whistle with the need to come back. So as the example that you've just quoted there, where you're calling your dog, the young dog thinks, oh yes, you know, it's gone to Mum, I'll go and have a look at that.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same with these guys here. An older dog is invaluable to teach young dogs. Obviously, not everybody has the luxury of having numerous dogs. So then it is very much, it is still achievable, but it's a lot slower process, because the dog hasn't got the advantage of using others to follow. This is where the handler, and hopefully his experience, or if not his experience, under the guidance of somebody like myself, a trainer, I can offer advice as to how to do it just on a one-to-one basis without having several dogs around.
They're gorgeous. I have to say, I've never had such a quiet environment with five Labradors around.
Trust me, they do have their moment. I have to say that it is, all the time, it is a training environment. When you walk through the gate, yes, they barked. I don't mind that. But what I do object to is when I tell them to be quiet, that they don't be quiet. And once again, it's important that they treat strangers with the respect that they deserve. These strangers have come into their territory. Yes, they had their initial bark, but now they can see you're with me and they're quite happy just to be around you and want to come and get some fuss from you all. But as I say, they will initially bark, which I don't have a problem with that, because in today's sort of environment, dog barking keeps people, unwanted people, away.
Yeah.
But obviously, with the number of dogs that I've got and in the environment that I live in, it could become a problem. So that's why it's important that when I tell them to be quiet, that they must be.
I think that's so, however old your dog is, whatever situation it is, you issue the command, you've got to see.
Oh, absolutely. Done. Plus as well, if the dog doesn't, you have got to go and reinforce, because once the dog learns that it can get away with ignoring the handler's command, that's when your problems start. So if the dog doesn't be quiet, that's when you go and reinforce the command, as I did by approaching the dog and forcibly telling it to be quiet, and then putting it in its basket, in its cage. It knows it's done wrong because it's been sent to its cage. So once again, it's all part of a learning curve, especially with the young dog, because it was the young dog that was the most vocal. It's all part of a learning curve, and he will learn that when I tell him to be quiet, because there are people here, I want those people to be here with me, that he must be quiet. And as I say, so it's a continual training environment, even now, like with all the dogs milling around. If they do become a nuisance, just a command, and as we saw earlier on, off they go. Okay, they've come out again because they want to see you. That is the nature of the Labrador. They're very much people's dogs.
Absolutely. You can't turn a Labrador into a border collie, can you?
Not at all. Their characters, their personalities are totally unique to the breed. Which is why they're the number one sort of most popular breed.
This is it, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, your five are wonderful. They're a joy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Chrissy's pack were wonderful company. And despite the level of training they've achieved, they were all still full of character. So forget the packs of treats. And if you want to succeed in training your dog, you can whistle.
Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. Star has been living in my house now for quite a while, and I have decided that, taking everything into account, it's great to have another dog around. It's not all positive. She does insist on licking me, and she has now developed a habit of treating me as a climbing frame. When will he grow to the proper size? The size of a Labrador like myself? I hope when she does, that he gives up the habit of clambering all over me, or I could be squashed. Something that arrived in the house soon after Star is the water pistol. The water pistol terrorised me in my puppyhood, and I have diarised my dreadful experiences at the hands of these merciless swine before. Since I've been a sensible grown-up dog, the water pistol went away. I don't know where it went, and frankly I don't care. I was happy that he had gone. With Star's entry into the house, he returned. I was dismayed, as I know his power. Just as you're settling into a good chew of something or a tasty morsel not presented in your bowl, or worse still, trying to spend a penny in the house without venturing out into the cold, rainy garden to toilet, wham! Water pistol sprays you straight in the face. It puts a cap off any act of naughtiness or rebellion, and it makes you feel it's easier to obey. When water pistol first appeared, I racked my brains to think of what wrongdoing I had committed. But I couldn't come up with anything. Soon the wonderful truth dawned on me. Water pistol had a new enemy. Not me, but Star. Even more wonderful, water pistol is on my side now. For example, just as Star is about to bite my tail, which he does often, water pistol strikes. This is great because although her teeth don't usually pierce my thick fur to actually cause any damage, it is still embarrassing to be going about my daily routine with a small white dog dangling from my rear end. So picture the scene. Star is about to snap her jaws onto my tail. Her mouth stretches open, tiny teeth glittering with menace, then wallop! A jet of water flies through the air, taking her completely by surprise and diverting her from the attack. Water pistol has entered the fight and defended me. This occurrence has been repeated, and it is so funny to watch the confusion on Star's face as she shakes off the water and ponders what has happened to her. I hope I didn't look that silly. Since Water Pistol started his campaign against Star, he has clamped onto my tail less and less often. Water Pistol has turned from my enemy to my ally. It's great. Star gets an unexpected jet of water in the face for many of the naughty habits she has. Recently, we were all out in the garden when she discovered how much fun digging was. I suppose it might have been my fault. I may have shown her a soft piece of soil and started off the digging, and even encouraged her. By the time my people noticed Star's efforts, I was lying peacefully on the other side of the lawn, while he was giving the impression he was trying to tunnel to Australia. That time, not only did he get comeuppance from the water pistol, he got a full bath, which he doesn't like at all. It really wasn't my fault, though. Another benefit of having Star around is the attention she attracts. I have to admit that I am past my cute puppy stage, and although I still get my fair share of admirers, I can always do with more fuss. With Star on hand, most people can't resist coming over to stroke the lovely puppy. I work this to my advantage by producing my best hangdog expression, managing a really sad droop to the eyes. If I gently nudge at Star's audience, before you know it, they're stroking me too, which is just what I planned. Another surprise advantage of having a much smaller companion is just how small she is. Up until now, if I lost a toy or a treat under a piece of furniture, it stayed lost until one of the people retrieved it for me. With all the determination in the world, there are just some spaces into which even I cannot jam my nose. Although Star looks like a plump fluff ball, she's actually quite small under all that fur, and she has perfected the knack of wriggling on her belly underneath obstacles such as the sideboard, and then wriggling back out again with her prize. Or, to be more accurate, my prize. The one flaw in this brilliant plan is that teamwork is not one of Star's strengths. She hasn't learned to share nicely yet. I wonder if I could persuade Water Pistol to help me teach her. Now there's a plan that needs some thinking about. Till next time.
Our breed profile is the Lakeland Terrier. It's not a very well-known breed. So first of all, what does a Lakeland look like?
It's a square dog. It's 14 inches to the shoulder, black and tan or red. It's a terrier. The ears should be nicely forward with a square face and a tail stuck on top. And it's a Lakeland. It's a bit smaller than a Welsh and a lot smaller than an Airedale.
Now you have an image of the Lakeland. What's their temperament like?
Well, they were bred for killing foxes in the Cumbrian Fells. They went to ground to kill foxes. So they're very brave, very hardy, very self-assured little dogs.
As a pet, one on its own is fantastic. They can be a bit argumentative if there's more than one together, but they make a lovely pet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they affectionate?
Very.
Mm. Yeah.
So they're their own person. They're quite independent.
We managed to integrate the two with him, showing him and having him as a pet dog, but he is a terrier, a full purebred terrier that demands a lot of exercise, a lot of stimulation and a lot of entertaining. It's certainly not a dog that I would leave in the house for a long period of time without some stimulation. You know, he's a fantastic pet dog, great with the children, great to be taken out of family walks, great to sit in the pub with, but demanding.
Yeah.
Demanding in that he's a purebred terrier. He's feisty, you know, he'll stand his ground, you know, he's the leader of the pack. But he's a good dog. We enjoy showing him. Well, I enjoy showing him. He's a good part of the family. He's integrated in our family, but he is his own person. He's got his own status in the house. You know, he's very entertaining, but he is hard work. But we get the rewards from him.
Yeah.
They're quite energetic and they're really playful and friendly. Mm. They like playing with other dogs. Mm. As well, but they're really clever. They like to be, you have to work with them, otherwise they're looking for trouble or you know doing something naughty. So, but they're really nice to have as a dog because they're really friendly and everything.
We've got three Wheaton Terriers, soft coated Wheaton. So we're used to terriers, but he's much more of a terrier than they are. His instincts are: he's in the washing machine, he's in the tumble dryer. He's down the back of the settee. We need a few rats around the place, I think, to keep him entertained.
What's the Lakeland temperament like?
Very good. Mine's really are. They're ideal pets. I've got three, and they all live together quite happily. Uh-huh. No problem. They're not fighters or anything. They really are good house dogs.
Yes.
Yes, I have.
And are they affectionate?
Why? Very affectionate, yes. It's who gets up my knee first. No, they are. They're nice dogs to have around. They like to be around people too.
How does training go with the Lakeland?
With difficulty? Some are obviously easier than others, but it's they're a terrier, so they've got a will of their own. Mm. They have got a very strong personal will.
They are a difficult dog to train. When I say training, he's not trained in a pet capacity at all. I've trained him in a show capacity. Yeah. So if he doesn't sit, he will only stand. And he's rewarded when he does that. But again, it's the stimulation that he needs. You know, I couldn't just expect him to run around the house and sit and stay, because he doesn't. If the front door opens, he's off.
Yeah.
You know, he certainly doesn't obey the command of, you know, come to heel. He's a terrier, and he has his own mind.
So when you say they're intelligent, are they intelligent at sort of picking up what you want them to pick up, the training, or are they intelligent at picking up, you know?
A bit of both, really. I mean, you can teach them things, but they'd like to do, if they're not in the mood, they'll probably try something else and see whether that, you know, but they get distracted because there's things going on. But they are really clever dogs. Yeah. So, but they make you laugh because they do things that they're not meant to do.
Watching him work out how to bring the broom into the house, didn't we?
Yeah.
He couldn't get it through the door. It took him about 10 minutes, but he worked it out, and you could see him thinking. And he changed his position and went and straight in, and yippee! He's very clever like that. Yeah.
So is it a case of sort of, if you can channel that intelligence and that energy, you're going to end up with a good dog?
Yes, I think so. I think you have to channel it, because otherwise you'd end up with a dog that was a nuisance. He can be quite naughty, but you can turn it into, you know, a really entertaining companion. Yeah. But you've got to keep on top of them. You can't just let them go to their own devices, because, you know, they would... he's definitely naughty. Norman, his name is... Because it goes naughty, nice, but definitely nosy.
How much exercise does a Lakeland need?
They'll happily run up fells and everything. If you want to just take them round the block a couple of times, they're fine. If you want to go on a 10-mile walk, they're fine.
With the exercise, do you have to be careful with the exercise in the early days, or can you exercise them early on?
We were advised by our breeder to put him away a couple of times a day, because he'll keep going all day long. He'll run his socks off, and it's not good for a growing, developing puppy. We've had to stop him from going up. He'll go up the stairs if he gets the chance. So you do have to control what they're doing, because he'll run and run and run until you stop him. Yeah. Not a good thing for a young puppy.
Is the Lakeland Terrier a sociable dog? Are they a good family dog? And do they get on with children?
With socialisation, yes. I would hesitate of very small children, because they can get a little bit hyperactive. But older kids, no problem.
I've got an 11-month-old, an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. And our baby, she does play with him in the lounge. I would never trust a dog with a child under any circumstances. But he's a good family dog. He has a cage. When things get, you know, rowdy in the house, as they do with children and what have you, there's five of us, he does go in his cage. Not for long periods of time, but he knows his place.
They're quite friendly, but he's quite nosy. So if there's something else going on, he'd rather sort of look over there and chase the leaf or something. But they are friendly. They're not nasty at all. He's quite happy to say hello to everybody, as long as, you know, there's not something better going on. You know, because if there is,
he's not bothered. Dogs as well, isn't he? We bring him here to ringcraft classes, and there's probably 20 different dogs, all sizes, from an Irish wolfhound down, and he gets on with all of them. His instinct is to say hello and play, you know. So he's been a real pleasure to have. I wish we'd have found Lakeland's years ago. We've had dogs, well, since I've been married 30 years, and we've always had a dog, first Lakeland, and I wish, you know, that we'd had more. So we're definitely going to have him more.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
We bought her, she was about 8 weeks old, and our son was six. And the first morning after we'd had her, we could hear this noise and retrieve. And she was out on the lawn, and he was throwing a tennis ball for her. And she adopted him. and he was her puppy. And for the almost the whole of her life, she used to sleep on his pillow by his face. And if you went in, she growled at you because she was defending her puppy.
Here's the crunch question for some people. How much grooming is involved in caring for a Lakeland Terrier?
Hard work, you know, they take a lot of grooming, not just a dog. You can sit in a corner. You know, I spend at least 2 to 3 hours a week grooming him to keep him on top of his coat.
So what would the grooming entail?
Just making sure they're supposed to have a good double coat, a waterproof coat, a good harsh top coat with an undercoat, and it's regular grooming to keep on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, you can grow them into big fluffy balls, but there's still that feisty terrier underneath.
Do they shed?
I don't let him get to a point where he sheds, because obviously I pull his coat and groom him regularly. I think any dog, given that if it was in a family environment with the change in the temperature, then every dog would shed its coat.
Yeah. Dogs in the dog world, the show world, it's just like everything else. They want it instant, and it takes a lot of work for a strip breed, and I think that's how they've been taught popularity.
When you say a strip breed, can you just explain what that is?
Yes. The coat, if this wasn't done, its coat, it would be like a right hairy teddy bear, I see they look like. You take it out with a stripping comb. They're done with a stripping knife for your fingers, and you pull the hair until you get it to where you want it to be. And you really have to spend about 2 hours on each dog a week. Not at the one time, over maybe each day so long, and just doing so much to get it like that. So it takes quite a bit of work, and when you're learning, it takes a lot of, it takes a more than just a few years before you get it, so that you're getting it with the professional lads, that as good as theirs, looking quite good. So I think that's why they've lost their popularity.
The stripping, is that something for show or for both show and pet?
Well, most pets, any pets that I do, it's usually a couple of times or 4 times a year, they'll strip them out for pets. I mean, it's not necessary. But if you want to do it for showing, I mean, they've got to be kept. It's not a case of doing it 4 times a year, it's keeping it up.
And do they shed?
No. Because they're stripped out, they don't. They don't shed at all. They're a really good one if somebody's wanting a dog that they've got allergies to. They're a good one because they don't shed,
Please do bear in mind that even though they don't shed, no dog is guaranteed not to trigger allergies. But if you like the sound of a Lakeland Terrier, the best idea would be to find your nearest club who can recommend a good breeder.
And now for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime! Hi and welcome to Puppy Playtime. I have discovered a great website for you to explore, www.dogbreeds.com. This site has 2 games to play. One is Hangman with dog breeds, and the other is a jigsaw puzzle that you can download. The good thing about the jigsaw puzzle is that the site seems to offer almost any dog breed you can think of. There are excellent breed profiles that tell you relevant information about breeds you are interested in. If you'd like to send a doggy e-card, this site is definitely for you, as there are hundreds of cute photos to choose from. I'd love any e-cards from this site, and my address is jenny@dogcastradio.com. I'll reply to any mail I receive. If you're struggling to find a good name for your dog, there are thousands to consider here, and any dog-related questions can be sent to Ask Zena. There's a link to this site on the Dogcast site, so go ahead and check it out. And that address is www.dogbreeds.com, and that's dogbreeds with a Z. Star's socialisation continued with a recent trip to the beach. This was her first visit to the seaside, and she loved it. At the dog-friendly cafe, she met 2 other young puppies, and they all had a wonderful time playing and wrestling. This is exactly the kind of experience Star needs, and we are planning to take her to puppy socialisation classes as soon as she's 4 months old. Have fun with your dogs, and make sure your dog has fun with you.
In our coverage of the Wag and Bone show, we brought you an interview with Tamara, who runs an animal sanctuary, about her dog Helga, who had been struck down with very bad health and needed an imported cart to support her back legs in order to get around. Well, the brilliant news is Helga is now walking and running unaided, independently, and that's brilliant. I know Tamara has spent a lot of time, money and effort supporting Helga, and it just shows that sometimes if we give the dogs the time they need, they do heal and they do go on to have a good quality of life. Now, our breed profile section on the website is growing, and if you haven't checked it out yet, do go and have a look, and there's a chance to upload your own photo of your dog if we've already profiled that breed. In the Newfoundland breed, we've had a photo uploaded of a Newfie who's apparently rescued 124 people. If this is your Newfoundland, please do get in touch again, as we'd love to have some details about this remarkable dog. It seems being rich and famous is no guarantee to getting things right with dogs. Heidi Clum and husband Seal have recently purchased a puppy from a pet shop for their children. Maybe they're not aware of the experiences of actress Julianne Moore, who bought a Yorkshire Terrier puppy from a pet shop, and subsequently, the terrier died. She's now the proud owner of a Labrador, whom she purchased from a recommended breeder, which we all know is the right way to go about things. Please do help put the message out there. Don't buy puppies from pet shops. So there you go. Sometimes even the rich and famous, or maybe especially the rich and famous, still have things to learn. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
I went to visit my friend, and she was playing chess with her dog. "That's a very clever dog," I said. "He's not so clever," she said. "I've beaten him 3 games out of 5."